Welcome to the Almost 30 podcast. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Krista, and we're your hosts, guides, and friends on this path. Almost 30 is not about your age. It's about the feeling. All of us are almost something, seeking community and resources to support the rumblings of transformation within us.
Our conversations are deep dives, shepherded by our insatiable curiosity and desire for connection, enduring inspiration, and a sense of levity that we can all benefit from.
We're looking to find the magic in the human experience.
Buckle up, baby. Your evolution is waiting.
Hello there. Welcome to Almost 30, baby.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Lindsay Simsek and my best friend, Krista Williams. Krista's in LA. I am in Brooklyn, New York. We are bi-coastal. Sometimes you'll see us together. Sometimes we'll be doing this thing virtually. But we're so happy you're here. If you're new to the podcast, this is a show we started during our Saturn return, which is like a crazy time during your late 20s. When you just... everything in your life that is not aligned just becomes so obvious that you have to lean in and create some change. So we're just happy and here to support you during any type of change that you might be going through. And today is a podcast in the health space. We started Almost 30 talking a lot about health and wellness and have come around to spirituality and various other topics that we feel like you all just go crazy for. So today's podcast is with Sarah Gottfried. She is a physician, researcher, author, and educator. And her new book, The Autoimmune Cure, is it's pretty powerful. I don't know about you, but I feel like I know so many people with autoimmune disease. And her approach and her research is pretty groundbreaking as far as I'm concerned and what I've heard in the more Western medical field. So I'm really excited to share this because I know there are a lot of people out there listening with autoimmune diseases.
Yeah, I've loved her work on hormones. Women, Food, and Hormones is so good. The Hormone Cure is a really good book. So if you're someone that wants to educate yourself on hormones, a lot of our women are interested in that topic. I became interested when I struggled with my hormones years ago, and I just found her work to be incredible. So I actually said, I'm like, hey guys, I would love to get her on the show. She's just so smart. She's so powerful. And I think this book is super, super interesting.
Yeah. So basically what she has found in her research and in her own experience as well is that there seems to be a common denominator when it comes to autoimmune disease, and that is trauma. So she's revealed in her work and in this book that trauma can rewire your body to trigger autoimmune diseases. But this book is not just telling you what is at the core of your autoimmune disease, but she's also giving us a comprehensive plan to reset your immune system and finally heal. So many of her patients have completely healed their autoimmune disease when they've gotten to the core of it. So we talk about things like elimination diets. We talk about how to optimize your sleep, why sleep is so important. We talk about toxic stress. So many people out there right now are dealing with toxic stress where your cortisol is at an all-time high and or cortisol is at just a high level consistently. Maybe it's not the highest, but it's just like a consistent cortisol spike. We talk about your microbiome. We talk about breath work. We talk about psilocybin and somatic therapy, her experience with somatic therapy, specifically Hakomi, which is a form of mindfulness-based somatic therapy she shared on the podcast. And so it's a really comprehensive approach and it sounds like a lot. Yeah. However, I know that so many people out there who deal with autoimmune issues are not finding answers and not able to improve their symptoms, whether it's brain fog or rashes or bloating or fatigue, or they can't sleep. And so I think her approach is really dealing with the whole body, the physical body, the energetic body, the memory in the body. And it's really profound.
Yeah. I was fascinated to see on her in the book that there was the ketamine-assisted therapy, and then there was the psilocybin-assisted therapy, and then MDMA-assisted therapy. I think those conversations are just coming into the mainstream and coming into the light. And it's so funny because I was thinking this week about the conversation on birth control, because there was, you know, an article about the wave of people getting off birth control and kind of ditching birth control happening. And I was just kind of encouraged because I know that we started talking about that in 2017 and many people were talking about it before us. We're not like, you know, the first people to ever say that birth control might not be the best solution for everyone. And we should really think about what we're putting in our body, but we have been kind of ahead, you know, or on trend with some of like the paradigm leaders. And we've been talking about microdosing for a little bit. Ketamine assisted therapy I've done with my therapist. I've fallen asleep every time. So nothing really has come through.
Miracles happened while you were asleep. How did you feel?
She keeps laughing. She's like, dude, you fell asleep again. I'm like, God, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm trying to protect myself.
Are you supposed to talk?
Yeah. So you can do whatever you want, but there is like a benefit to talking and processing things or reprogramming things. Cause essentially, you know, a doctor would explain this way better, but in my own understanding, what it is you're able to pull up and out of the stories of the situation and sort of the drama around the situation and see things much more clearly from like a different perspective. I think psilocybin also helps that too. You're kind of just out of the stories and into the truth. And so ketamine can help you process things in just a much more clear, loving way. It's a dissociative. So you're really dissociating from your body in a lot of different ways. It's very like mind, very visual. You are pretty much tranquilized for like an hour or something when you're laying in it. You shouldn't operate any heavy machinery or anything like that. And the whole process probably takes like 2 to 3 hours because you need to kind of come up from the medicine and stuff like that. But yeah, it's been something that I'm just always down to try things. I'm always down to see what's out there as far as healing and as far as supporting myself and living, you know, a life that I love, but it hasn't really been something that's worked for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's, I mean, that's really good to hear. I feel like some people feel like everything should work a certain yes. way according to what they've seen on Instagram, where they're like, why didn't ayahuasca like jam with me like everyone else on social media or whatever it is? So I think it's really important to share your honest experience with that. But I'm really excited for this episode. It is super deep on the science. So get ready for that. I know y'all love that. Dr. Sarah Gottfried, the book is The Autoimmune Cure. It is out now. And if you all are interested in more podcasts about health specifically, or maybe your hormones, we have over 650 episodes for you. All health, wellness, spirituality to support you as you navigate this life, baby.
Yeah. And I would send this to a friend, especially if you know someone that has autoimmune or struggles with autoimmune, all of your health and wellness besties, this is a perfect one. So make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. It means so much to Lindsay and I that you've been a part of our lives for so long. It does not get past me that there's a lot of podcasts that you could choose and you choose to hang with us. We love you very, very much. So almost30.com, almost 30 podcasts on Instagram and TikTok. We be popping off YouTube. We have video. So the video is now happening for almost 30. It looks really beautiful. And it's so fun to kind of like hang out with us video wise. So we'd love to connect with you there. And then you can get Sarah's book at her website, sarahgottfriedmd.com. So that's sarahgottfriedmd.com. Or you can buy it on Amazon, wherever you find books. And thank you so much for coming on Almost 30, Dr. Sarah Gottfried. We really appreciate it.
All right, y'all, enjoy this episode and we'll see you on the other side.
Love ya.
We know that taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should be simple. I know y'all, you're very busy, lots going on. It should be simple. That's why for the last 4 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. This is just one scoop mixed in your water once a day, every day. And y'all, it has made me feel energized. It has made me feel super nourished at the start of my day. And I'm so thankful. I've been taking it for 4 years, as I said. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. So I know a lot of you out there are like, how do I incorporate all these supplements? What's going on? AG1, baby. So easy. I like to drink it first thing in the morning, which is recommended for optimal nutrient absorption. So basically I fill up my shaker with extra cold water. Sometimes I add a little ice, maybe just like a dash of lemon. I don't know. Sometimes I get crazy. And one scoop of AG1. I shake it up real good, like I'm at the bar or something, and I pour it into martini glass. Just kidding. I just drink it. But if I'm running short on time and can't mix the AG1 before going out, I'll just grab a travel pack. It's easy. I just drop it in my water and shake it up. All good. And you are going to get exactly what you need as far as daily nutrients. So if there's one product that I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's definitely AG1. And that's why we've partnered with them for so long. They are OG partners of the pod, and for good reason. We use them every single day. We've taken them on tour. We just love them. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/almost30. That's drinkag1.com/almost30. Check it out. Oh, I am a girl that loves to rent my clothes. We used to do it all the time on tour for Almost 30. And now I'm in a season where I'm like, ooh, this is so convenient and so fun. Like, I'm kind of getting back into my fashion sense after having a baby. And it's just the best. So I've been using Nuuly, N-U-U-L-Y. It is a subscription clothing rental service that's all about helping you have fun and get creative with your style. So I'm like really trying things out, and it's so fun. So it really lets you shift. Go back. Renting from Nuuly really lets me shift gears in my wardrobe without like a complete and expensive overhaul. So every month I rent 6 items from Nuuly's shared closet of over 17,000 styles for everything I have going on, like dressy stuff for occasions. I actually have a birthday coming up where I need to dress up a little bit. So I got a dress from Nuuly. I'm going out a little bit more on dates with my husband, so I've been renting clothes for those dates, casual tops, premium jeans, honestly, anything you need, outerwear, sweaters, vacation fits, everything. So I really love that I get to try out trending styles, colors, silhouettes. Then I send them back for something new. It's easy. Nuuly takes care of everything from shipping to laundry. I can even pause without paying a fee if I need to take a break for any reason. They are carrying Frame jeans right now, and so I got some Frame jeans. They are so cute. Also other brands include Farm Rio, Paige, Hutch, Anthropologie, Simon Miller, Amanda Uprichard, Free People, Lily Pulitzer, FP Movement, and so much more. Oh, I'm so excited for y'all. Go rent your clothes. It's the best. It's great for the environment, for your wallet, and for your fashion sense. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any 6 styles, but right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code ALMOST30. Just go to NUULY.com. That's NUULY.com. That's 2 U's. And enter the code ALMOST30 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com, NUULY.com, with code ALMOST30. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes. So excited for you. Okay, I'm so happy to be sitting down with you virtually. I have been deep in your new book, Dr. Gottfried, and I am excited to dig in because, and the new book is The Autoimmune Cure, Healing the Trauma and Other Triggers That Have Turned Your Body Against You. I am someone who, thankfully right now, does not experience any glaring autoimmune issues. However, I feel as though in the last 7 years that we've been doing this podcast, and I've become more aware and awake to the environmental impacts, the stress impacts, the toxic load that we are living amongst, I'm just aware of so many more autoimmune issues, whether it's friends, family. And I ask myself, I'm like, was this always a thing, or is this something new? So I'd love to kind of start there, and also to just give people a really clear understanding of what an autoimmune disease or condition really is.
Lindsay, I'm just so happy to be with you. And I love talking about autoimmunity because there's a misconception about it. A lot of people think that unless they've got a diagnosis of Hashimoto's thyroiditis or rheumatoid arthritis, that it doesn't affect them. Mm. But when you look at the data, when you look at something called anti-nuclear antibodies, and you look at some of the labs and the rate of positive of anti-nuclear antibodies in a population, it's something like 30% of us. So there's Wow. been this exponential rise in autoimmunity. And let me just define it so we're all on the same page. So there's a state of health where your immune system is working just perfectly. And then there's autoimmune disease, which is where you're making antibodies. They're these proteins that your immune cells make as a weapon against your own tissues. So there's about 100 autoimmune diseases, but there's a vast middle space, a continuum, where you develop autoimmunity. And so there's a lot of different reasons for why that's increased. The food supply, mm-hmm. the stress that we're experiencing, hormonal changes, all of those things contribute to a pretty dramatic increased risk of autoimmunity, which can go on for 7 to 14 years before it declares itself as a disease and gets diagnosed by a clinician. So autoimmunity is definitely on the rise, and we've especially seen a dramatic increase after the pandemic. So we think that things like long COVID are also autoimmune, and even some conditions that you might not think of as autoimmune diseases, like endometriosis, some types of irritable bowel syndrome, fibromyalgia, those things are a condition in which the body is attacking itself. Mm. So we've got to broaden the way that we think of autoimmunity. And when you do that, so many more people suffer with it than you might realize. Mm.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I feel as though there are a lot of people in our community who are having a hard time reckoning with a diagnosis of an autoimmune disease, but then also having been either misdiagnosed or a delayed diagnosis for so long, and they're really seeking, and I think it's intuitive, they're really seeking this hybrid approach, you know, an Eastern and Western approach, or maybe some people would say like a more holistic approach, because they're realizing that just the Western medical approach is not necessarily curing it or helping it, and or hasn't helped them up until this point. So I guess what would you say about that, having come from a Western medical background, but then also I know that you have a more holistic approach?
Lindsay, I would go one step further. I would say the Western medical approach utterly fails yeah. these folks. And I'm one of them. So I also have autoimmunity. It's something that I've been able to reverse over the past few years as I wrote this book. But what we know is that if you just look at the basic statistics of autoimmune disease, we know that people typically see about 4 to 6 doctors, and they struggle with symptoms of autoimmune disease for about 4 to 7 years before they get a correct diagnosis. So to me, that is a place where we are just missing the mark as conventional physicians. And I trained in the conventional system, as you mentioned. So I'm not throwing it under the bus. We need it for acute care. We need it when you break a bone, when you've got an infection. But for chronic conditions such as autoimmune disease, there's a massive gap that people experience. And it leads to just so much frustration and heartache and, yes. you know, just searching for answers, and you don't know why these mysterious symptoms are happening. Mm-hmm. And then you go to your doctor and often you're told, well, you're just getting older. Well, you just had a baby. Well, are you sleeping enough? And so there's a way that people can get gaslit and dismissed, and we've got to change that. So yes, a hybrid approach. You know, I'm the director of precision medicine at the Marcus Institute at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. And so we have an approach that is looking at genetics and looking at biomarkers. You know, some of these early tests, like the one I mentioned, anti-nuclear antibodies, I run an autoimmune panel on every single patient that I see.
Wow. And those autoimmune panels, I guess they're showing a predisposition?
They show a predisposition. So if you look at what's required to develop an autoimmune disease, there's three things. And this was first described by Alessio Fasano, who's a pediatric gastroenterologist at Massachusetts General Hospital. So the three-legged stool is genetic predisposition together with increased intestinal permeability, so-called leaky gut, and then a trigger. And the trigger is really critical because for some people, that's pregnancy and being postpartum. It's a really common time to develop Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It could be perimenopause. That's where we see a lot of vaccine reactions. It's when there's new onset multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes. I've seen all of these things in my practice. It could also be toxic stress and trauma. So we know that people who experience adverse childhood experiences or ACEs, they then have an increased risk of about 45 different chronic diseases, including autoimmune disease.
And I really want to dig in here because I think this is where people would consider, I guess, the emotional experience of a person. People might have a hard time like understanding the connection to the body if they haven't made that connection quite yet. And so can you go a step further and just describe how a traumatic experience, whether it's big T or little T, and maybe there's a difference in how it affects the actual physical body, but how does that happen? And then how does it take such a stronghold in the body that it develops something like an autoimmune disease?
Great question. So I know our listeners and viewers love to go deep on the science, and this is a science moment. Great. So the big T and the little T traumas, in some ways, it doesn't matter what the event was. So big T trauma is something that everyone agrees was traumatic, surviving 9/11, for instance, or going through a genocide. The death of someone that you're really close to, especially if it's sudden. So there's the big T traumas, and then there's the small T traumas. The things like a breakup with a partner or, losing a job. Things that still can have a signature in the body. And the signature is interesting because the signature doesn't really care whether it was a big T or a little T. So the way that the body changes is critical. And the way that we know this happens is through the stress response. So if you think of kind of the classic stress response, it was designed to deal with, living on the savanna, being exposed to like a predator, getting maybe a wound from the predator, and then your body kicks into gear to fight infection. So your immune system flies into the wound to kind of take care of business and to limit exposure to bacteria and risk of infection. And so that was designed to happen maybe like once a month, once a quarter, or something like that. We're not designed to experience the level of trauma that we are all exposed to nowadays. So if you look at the stress response, what a lot of people think of is the way that the brain talks to the adrenal glands. So that's called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. But the stress response is much bigger than that. So the way that I think of it in terms of the signature of trauma is that your PINE system is affected. So that's your psychology, that's the P, your immune system, that's the I, your neurological system, especially your vagus nerve, which is, the signal to the body that you're soothed and you're safe. And then finally, the endocrine system. So your hormones, and it's not just, people think of the main stress hormones as cortisol and epinephrine, and it's actually much broader than that. So it includes estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, even insulin and its effect on glucose. Mm. So this entire pine network is affected by trauma and toxic stress. And that's what we need to consider, because that then sets you up for autoimmunity, especially if you're female, because 4 out of 5 people with autoimmune disease are female.
Mm. So I guess what have you found to be the difference in the way that those systems of that PINE acronym, how do they differ in men and women, and or like, do they just metabolize trauma differently, or are, is it about how men are taught to deal with trauma? What is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the original studies of the stress response were done at Harvard Medical School by a guy named Walter Cannon. So he discovered the fight-flight response, mm-hmm. which is the sympathetic nervous system. We've all heard of that. But he studied men, and he assumed that that fight-flight also applies to women. And it doesn't really. So yeah, sometimes when you get into a stress response, you might go into fight-flight. But women are more likely to do some other things, like freeze mm-hmm. or fawn, mm-hmm. because evolutionarily, you know, if you've got an infant in one arm and you've got a toddler in the other arm and you're facing a predator, mm-hmm. fighting that predator or running from the predator is not going to work so well. So women tend to do different things. So sometimes freeze, sometimes fawn, or people pleasing. We also tend to befriend. So tending and befriending tends to work much better for women. It's basically girlfriend medicine. Mm-hmm. It's like you and Krista and yeah. the girlfriend medicine that you offer to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at this question of how are women different with the PINE network, we have more stress. We're exposed to more trauma. So if you just look at adverse childhood experiences, women have more sexual trauma mm-hmm. as children, and they also have more sexual trauma as adults. So pretty staggering figures in terms of rape and sexual violence, mm-hmm. sexual assault. So women experience more trauma. We've got more psychological issues related to that. So even when you take men and women and you expose them to the same trauma, like a military situation, women have higher rates of post-traumatic stress disorder. We've got double the rate of depression. We've got higher rates of generalized anxiety. Mm. So women are more vulnerable throughout the PINE network. And if you look at the immune system, you know, we especially saw this during the pandemic, that women mount a stronger immune response than men do. Mm. And so when you vaccinate, for instance, women have a much stronger response to that. And it's part of the reason why during the pandemic, women fared better than men. So mm-hmm. death rates initially were higher in men than they were in women. The problem is that stronger immune response can backfire, and it can lead to more dysregulation and more autoimmunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of the neurological system, if you look at things like the balance between the sympathetic nervous system, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, versus the parasympathetic nervous system, which is stay and play, rest and digest, the balance between the two, you can measure as heart rate variability. And HRV is just lower in women compared to men. So if you have a wearable and you're tracking your HRV, which I would recommend mm-hmm. for all of our listeners, we know that women have lower rates. So that's something that you can track and kind of see the effect of. And then in terms of our endocrine system, I'll save the best for last. Our hormones are just so much more complicated than men's are. So we go through these wild fluctuations at puberty. You know, we raise our estrogen levels. It gets that raises oxytocin. We start to care about our appearance in a whole new way. We care about friendships and our peer groups. We go through, you know, the fertility journey and getting pregnant, where your hormones are sky high. They're slightly different. You know, it's estriol together with progesterone, but much higher than when you're not pregnant. And then you deliver this beautiful baby and placenta and your levels go from sky high down to nothing. And it's kind of a preview of coming attractions in perimenopause. Mm-hmm. And then perimenopause is just a dramatic change, not just hormonally, but all these other systems are changing too. Your immune system, your metabolic system, your blood sugar, all of those things are changing. So with the endocrine system, women, once again, have more vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the way I summarize this is to say, it's a health hazard to be female in our culture.
Yeah.
And so there's biological reasons for that. And then there's also gender reasons for that, that mm-hmm. are socially constructed. You know, the way that women are more in the workplace than ever before, and yet we're also expected to be the caregivers for children and for parents, maybe grandparents. We've got, you know, financial gaps in terms of how much money we make. There's lots of gender differences that lead to more disruption of the PINE network in women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mental load and the stress load, or as you say, toxic stress that I feel like women are under. And on top of that, I feel like, though I think women more than men have the language to talk about their feelings and express themselves, I do think women also, and this is generalization, take on that I want to be perceived as being okay and stable and able to do it all and take on it all. And Krista and I have realized in the past couple years through various, whether it's health issues or otherwise, that trying to do it all has honestly made us so unhappy and sick. And our bodies have responded in very visible ways. And so, yeah, I just wanted to say that I've absolutely experienced this. And I know a lot of women out there are carrying so, so much. And so if we are carrying this in the body, in a physical sense, and I think in an emotional, spiritual sense, an energetic sense, can you walk us through, especially for women, ways in which we can begin to tend to, if we're talking about trauma, tend to the trauma? I think a lot of people go to talk therapy, which I am all for therapy. And I think with certain traumatic experiences, that will only go so far, and if at all, go anywhere, because of how connected it is to the body. Can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, I wanna honor you and Krista for recognizing the trap of, you know, the superwoman trap.
Yeah,
it took me. I think I realized it later than you. I was in my mid-30s when mm-hmm. I just hit a wall
yeah.
and went to my doctor with a list of woes, you know, like PMS, feeling mm-hmm. like I was way too young to feel so old, and decreased libido. Mm-hmm. I probably had some autoimmunity brewing then that I didn't know about. I had really high cortisol. My cortisol level was about 3 times what it should be.
Wow.
I had mood swings. And so recognizing that, I think, is really critical. And you're right. I mean, your sense about talk therapy, there's a time and a place for it. And I think there's some extraordinary therapists out there. But if I was told when I was in my 20s and I started weekly talk therapy, that the chances of that resolving my trauma, the childhood trauma that I had, was somewhere around 30%. I don't think I would have signed up for weekly psychotherapy. I mean, it's a tremendous time commitment. It's a financial commitment. Mm-hmm. And 30% is just abysmal.
Yeah.
So 70% of people, through that rehashing of, you know, the experiences that they've had in childhood and as adults, it's a different part of the brain, that talking part, than the part of the brain that's involved in the trauma signature. Mm-hmm. And so unless you're really addressing the part of the brain where the trauma signature lives, you may not resolve it. And, you know, the other approach to trauma is selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And 1 in 4 women take an SSRI. There's 3 different SSRIs that are approved for post-traumatic stress disorder. And once again, the efficacy is about 30%. The issues are in the tissues. They're not just, you know, cognitive. Mm-hmm. And what's super exciting to me is that there are healing states of consciousness that you can enter with breath work, with yoga, with orgasm, mm-hmm. and with psychedelic medicine that have much higher rates of success. So if you just look at MDMA-assisted therapy, 2 to 3 treatments have been shown in randomized trials with people with post-traumatic stress disorder to have an efficacy of somewhere around 67 to 71%. So that's how many people resolve their symptoms of PTSD with 2 to 3 treatments. So we've got this massive shift happening mm-hmm. in how we think about trauma and also how we address it. And what I talk about in the book is some of the somatic treatments that I've had experience with that I think are really effective. Things like EMDR, mm-hmm. Hakomi, somatic experiencing. Peter Levine is the founder of that. The neuroemotional technique, which is something that we've studied at Thomas Jefferson in randomized trials. So there's lots of different ways that you can address the issues in the tissues so that they don't lead to problems like autoimmune disease.
I have been sharing this app with everyone I know, and I cannot live without superhuman activations. So, okay, let me tell you. So this is a new type of audio. They're kind of like a mix between a motivational podcast, cinematic music, affirmations, and guided visualizations. Honestly, I have never found anything like this out there. There are countless categories on the app because these audios are designed to be listened to in everyday moments. So for example, this morning, I have some goals that I'm really working towards. And so I listened to the Feel Re-Inspired with Your Goals activation. So this is revitalizing my vision to reignite my path and reclaim my goals. Sometimes I can get off track, you know, especially in new motherhood. And so this activation got me so centered and refocused on what I want to accomplish and how I can get there. It's just everything. And so I'm really excited to share this with you all. Krista and I have been obsessed with this app, everything from their walking activations to getting ready in the morning activations, cooking and cleaning activations, writing activations, workout ones, motivational pep talks, which I do often. There's so much more. The single biggest thing I've done to transform my life is to visualize and tap into the energy I feel when being my best self. So I've been able to, in moments where I feel like I've lost my center, listen to an activation and really tap into that future self, that future moment, and feel it in every cell of my body. I feel it emotionally, I feel it physically, and it's been a super powerful manifestation tool. All of the audios are science-backed and made to help you transform your mindset and become your future self. So whether your goal is to earn more money, get healthier and fitter, get happier, or virtually anything else, these activations will be the best tool in your toolbox to help you get there. I am so, so excited for you. It is way easier to implement into your routine and far more effective than any other audio app out there. So don't miss out on this crazy deal. They rarely do discounts. So listen up. On top of the 14-day free trial, get over 60% off your subscription for a limited time only at activations.com/almost30. That's literally, there's literally no risk. If you change your mind and forget to cancel after that trial, you're covered by their money back guarantee. The offer is only available through their website, not the app store. So that's activations.com/almost30. Super simple. Only this link, activations.com/almost30 for over 60% off. This expires soon. Enjoy. I am juggling quite a bit lately. I have a new baby, 6 months in, and we are finishing our book and running a business and a marriage and a house. And it's just a lot, but everything is all good and just my dream, but it's a lot. But I have found that if my health routine is on point, then everything runs smoothly. And one huge piece of that routine is my supplementation. And Symbiotica has just always been a constant in my routine. If you haven't heard of Symbiotica, they are a health and wellness company that does everything with intention. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Like, I know them. Shervin has been on the podcast many times. I just have seen how passionate, how incredibly intelligent, how dedicated he is to creating products that are clean, plant-based, without toxic or harmful chemicals, which we need more of that in the world. So let me just run you through what I'm taking. I take the vitamin D3 K2. It's the liposomal form. I just squirt 12 little pumps in my mouth every single morning. I also take their B12. I'm also obsessed with the liposomal vitamin C. I have these little packets. Whether it's winter or whatever season, it's obviously great for immunity, but it also is amazing because it has biotin, one of nature's most beautifying ingredients. So I've seen an improvement in my skin, hair, and nail growth as well. I do have mom brain, but I'm doing my best to just support my brain health in any way. So for brain health, focus, and memory, I really love taking their liposomal magnesium L-threonate. It's an innovative form of magnesium that is able to cross the blood-brain barrier. It supports brain health, mood, immune system function, and overall well-being. It's incredible and tastes amazing. It's like this yummy vanilla cream flavor. That's the thing with Symbiotica products. They taste unbelievable. So it really makes taking all of these supplements so easy, so yummy, and I actually look forward to it. So if you want to give Symbiotica a try, there is no better time. Right now is the time. Symbiotica.com, Cymbiotika. Use our code ALMOST30, 20% off site-wide. So major. And then when you bundle and subscribe, which I highly recommend because you never want to run out of anything, you're going to get an extra discount. So just do it up. Symbiotica.com and use the code ALMOST30 for 20% off site-wide. Yeah, I've experienced EMDR, which was very profound. I do breath work on a regular basis, but there was a time in which I was really doubling down on breath work. And it was breath work to me is a psychedelic experience. And for me, for anyone out there who has not done breath work, we've talked about it a lot. We have in the past talked about it a lot on the show. And you don't ingest anything. You're literally breathing in a holotropic fashion. There are variations on this, but I think I can describe it as one, it's not easy. So there's some resistance that comes up, et cetera. But I think very simply, I was able to experience my soul. You know, I really felt who I was. And I think we live in a time, especially... Yeah, we live in a time, I think, for men and women where we are always doubting who we are, what we should do, where we should be. Are we successful enough? Like that stress load creates layers over who we really are. And like to experience yourself in like the pureness of your heart, and that's what I experienced in breath work, it felt like it melted away so many layers of little traumas that I've had in the past. And while they still are in my memory, it's not like I forgot about them. They just don't hold the same charge. And I noticed in my relationships and just reactions to experiences how melted away they were because I was no longer reactive. I didn't have a nervous system reaction to things. So I just wanted to emphasize that because one, that is something that you can learn and do on your own and is free. Not everything needs to be super expensive, though some of those investments are incredibly worth it.
Well, I'm so glad you raised holotropic breath work because I had an experience about 3 years ago where I went to a medical conference and they had a tent with, you know, like a dome with holotropic breath work.
Wow.
And I went into it, you know, I'm someone who's practiced breath work for most of my life. I started learning it from my great grandmother when I was five.
Wow.
So I've done it a lot, and I had a regular meditation practice going into holotropic breath work. And I went in, the conference was in Vegas. And so I was at a hotel with a casino and smoking and, you know, late nights and a lot of drinking. And I just felt kind of toxic. I had a little low-grade headache. Mm-hmm. And I was just skeptical of holotropic breath work. I walk into that dome and I had a private session with someone because no one else showed up for this group practice. And after 20 minutes, my entire system was transformed.
Wow.
Utterly transformed. And so what you're describing gives me chills, because there's so much you can do to settle your body. And yet a lot of people, for whatever reason, just don't bring that into their lives. Mm-hmm. Holotropic breath work is one of them. So I spent a lot of time talking about the data on holotropic breath work in the book, because as my teachers described to me, when you're doing holotropic breath work for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, sometimes longer, you're creating your own medicine. Mm. You're creating like this perfect medicine for yourself through this way of breathing. And in some ways, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. Now, there's not as much in the way of randomized trials with holotropic breath work like there are with MDMA-assisted therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy. And yet it's one of those interventions, as you said, that's free. It's got such a low risk profile. I mean, basically almost none. There's some people who get anxious and they need a little, you know, support when they're doing it. But it's a profound way of working with your stress response and with a history of trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't say enough about it. I mean, I want people to get the book too, because I think what helps me in understanding the value of these practices that aren't necessarily linked to like the Western medical world is, well, how is this going to help me? Like how, what's the connection? And so you bring in so much science that is really helpful for me to remember when I'm doing these things and almost like make the in the moment connection of what's happening in the body. So I can almost imagine my vagus nerve, you know, like relaxing, if you know, that's visually what helps me. But yeah, thank you so much for that emphasis on breath work. I also wanted to just note, I think a lot of people might be listening and they're like, well, and you mentioned the ACE score earlier, might be questioning whether the trauma that they have experienced in their life, whether from the past childhood or more recently, is valid, is really truly affecting them. I think we have comparisonitis. I do with a lot of things where I'm like, well, it's not as bad as what happened to her or him. So, one, where can people take that test? And I took it, and I'm curious about I feel like the questions were mainly around early childhood trauma. So is that what we're looking at, or is it more holistic?
It's more holistic.
Yeah.
So there's kind of two ways to answer that question. The first way is, what does the science tell us? And the science is interesting. I would say the most validated trauma scale that we have is the ACE questionnaire. And so it's in the public domain. Mm-hmm. And if you Google Sarah Gottfried ACE score, it'll, you know, there's a simple test that you can take. But that particular questionnaire was based on a study that was done originally at the Centers for Disease Control in Kaiser Permanente. Mm-hmm. So it was based in San Diego. It had a pretty diverse patient population, which is important. And they took a group of middle-aged people so age 40 to 65. And they went back and asked, how many adverse childhood experiences did you have? And they used the questionnaire that's available. So out of 10 questions related to physical abuse, sexual abuse, having parents who were divorced, having a parent with a substance use disorder, such as drinking too much alcohol, having a parent who went to jail, neglect. Mm-hmm. So it's a robust questionnaire, but it also doesn't ask about a number of other things. It doesn't ask about bullying. It doesn't mm-hmm. ask about things like, were you seen and heard in an authentic way?
Yeah.
Did you have parents who were a clean mirror for you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to achieve in order to get the love and attention that you wanted and deserved? Leading to what I see so much in my patient population and myself, leading to a lot of self-reliance, hyper-independence, yeah. kind of overachieving, some of that superwoman mm-hmm. phenotype that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So the ACE questionnaire was important because they found that if, you know, this is one of those tests you don't want to score high on, you want a score of zero. So for people who had a score of one or higher, they had a greater risk in adulthood, not just of the mental health things that you might think of, like PTSD, anxiety, depression, attention deficit disorder, disordered eating, but they had a risk of these other chronic health conditions, like heart disease, autoimmune disease, cancer, diabetes, problems with your blood sugar. So that original study was really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I would really encourage our listeners to do the questionnaire and to know what your score is. The test that I have in the book is from the Institute for Functional Medicine. They allowed me to reprint it. And it's a little bit different than the original ACE mm-hmm. questionnaire. But I would say know your ACE score. It's really critical. So in, yeah, the comparisonitis, I think, is an important point because when I first started talking to my family about trauma, there was kind of this blanket stare, you know, like, oh, we had a happy childhood. Like, what are you talking about? Mm. Like, I don't really see how I had an experience of trauma growing up. But I had parents who were divorced. I have an A score of 6.
Wow.
And so it's when you realize this, when you realize that, okay, maybe some of the reactivity that I have with my team, with my mm-hmm. marriage, mm-hmm. maybe there's a way that I could resolve trauma and live in a more heart-centered, embodied way.
Yeah.
So I think that comparisonitis, you know, it harkens back to the idea of big T trauma and small T trauma. They both can affect your pine network in significant ways.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I think, yeah, that feeling of not being validated or our parents or caregivers not having awareness, you know, it's like they might never have awareness. And just that scene that you just painted of them being like, wait, I thought your childhood was pretty good, can be like kind of like a little mini trauma in itself because it's, you're having such a different experience, you know, and now with a child of my own, I'm not overcome with a feeling all the time of like, oh God, is this, you know, going to affect him? But I am thinking about it. And thankfully, you know, I've done quite a bit of work and continue to, but yeah, it's such an interesting thing to have different experiences yet live within the same home.
It's true. And it's, you know, how old is your son?
He's 6 months.
6 months. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got two daughters. So I just really, feel that, desire to, you know, raise a kid yes. that feels regulated.
Mm-hmm. How have you done that or begun to do that? Because I can imagine, have you always wanted to do that, known that you can do that or should do that?
I didn't even know that language.
Yeah.
When okay. I was a mother, yeah. You know, when my kids were the age of your son. So, you know, I knew about the mother baby yeah. bond.
Sure.
And how breastfeeding, you know, holding, soothing, calming the baby down, going through your list of why they're crying and trying to attend to it.
Yes.
Like those are the basic things mm-hmm. that help to regulate a baby and help them develop a nervous system that knows how to regulate on its own.
Yeah.
So that's a process of co-regulation, which I think is really critical. But of course, it doesn't stop when your baby gets older. Last night, I had dinner with my older daughter in San Francisco, and I'm much more intentional now about regulating. Like she just moved. She was living with a roommate, and she just moved to a studio. She's got a really busy job. She wants to become a therapist. Mm-hmm. So she's getting ready to apply to graduate school. And so I just try to show up in a way that's regulating for her, that provides a sense of safety. And, you know, I'm so curious about her life. And I would say the mothering and the regulation and the co-regulation never ends.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, you know, another factor that I think is important when you think of adverse childhood experiences is that there's also what your ancestors experienced.
That lineage, the trauma with
a lineage.
Yeah.
And it's not measured in an ACE questionnaire, but we know that, you know, for instance, people who've gone through the Holocaust have a higher risk of fibromyalgia and autoimmune disease. We know that there was a really interesting experience in Canada called, it was an ice storm that happened around 1998. Mm-hmm. And so there was a period of time in Northern Canada where people were isolated in their homes without heat, without power, and it went on for quite a long time. And so scientists got really curious about this because there was a whole area, region that was affected. And they looked at the women who were pregnant during this ice storm. And they found now, you know, 20 years later, that the adults that were born to those women have a problem with two sets of genes. So they've got an epigenetic change, mm-hmm. not their DNA, but the way that their DNA is kind of paper-clipped with two sets of genes, their immune system genes and their metabolism genes, the way they regulate glucose and produce energy. So those two sets of genes are really vulnerable to this transgenerational trauma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I think of as soul wounds. So we have to consider that as well.
Yeah, we've spoken about that as well. And it's really hard to wrap your mind around it. But I even just thinking about, I don't know where I read this or heard this. So let me know if you've heard this as well. But thinking about what my mother was going through while I was in her belly, you know, thinking about especially, you know, that last trimester or and I've spoken to her about this and some things track and make sense as far as some kind of mysterious anxieties that I have and or ways that my nervous system responds. And it's been super enlightening. But yeah, it's something to look at as well. And so I think that really requires us, whether it's to ask questions of our living ancestors to understand maybe a broader history of what our ancestors went through. Yeah, I think that can be incredibly helpful.
It's a really important point. And I would even say, let's get more specific.
Great.
Because I think that is an invitation for the people who are listening to us. You know, I can tell you, I love my mother. I mean, she's an amazing woman. And she gave birth to me in 1967, which sounds like so long ago, but it was a time when Twiggy was sort of one of the first supermodels.
Yeah.
And so she is 5'7". She weighed about 120 pounds.
Wow.
She gained about 25 pounds when she was pregnant with me. And I think she was just hungry. Like, I don't think she was fully nourished. Mm-hmm. It was a time when smoking was really popular. We didn't realize all the adverse effects. Mm-hmm. And she was in a marriage that was breaking up. So my parents got divorced. And so she was 21.
Wow.
And I think, you know, if you just imagine, she had just finished college. She was pregnant with me. And this was at a time when I think she had a lot of uncertainty about her future.
Of course.
So you think about some of those effects, and you, in some ways, it's no wonder that in my 30s, I was struggling so much with my stress response. So I've learned a lot of ways to work with that. And the good news is we've got a lot of research now looking at some of these somatic therapies, as well as psychedelic assisted therapy, as a way of changing your epigenetics, as a way of kind of wiping the slate clean in terms of the paper clips that are on your DNA related to your immune function and your metabolic function.
Yeah, the use of psychedelics has been so fascinating to read about and track. And I've experienced some myself, but not in a more clinical approach. So, I've done microdosing, but then also have done plant medicine. But you're speaking mostly about MDMA. Like, I guess, what do you consider more of a clinical approach to psychedelics?
Well, I'm not sure a clinical approach or the medical model is the best model here, but you know, there's a tradition for thousands of years of indigenous cultures using psychedelics to bring the soul forward, you know, to work with material and to live a more contented, fuller life.
Yeah.
So what I think is helpful with the medical model is to show how safe they are. So we know that every psychedelic that we've studied, and certainly the ones that are in my book, like psilocybin from magic mushrooms, MDMA, which is not a classic psychedelic, but is probably the first thing that's going to get FDA approved for trauma. The use of ketamine, which is FDA approved, but it's used off-label, mostly for treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, disordered eating. There's even a study I know about for premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Ayahuasca, LSD. We know that all of these medicines are safer than alcohol. So alcohol has a lot of untoward effects. It shrinks the brain. It leads to a lot of fat deposition. It's a toxin in the body. It's especially bad for the female body, worse than it is in the male body.
Yes.
And yet there's a way that we normalize it. And many of us have a sticky relationship with it. There's a researcher in the UK, David Nutt, who talks about how it's more dangerous to ride a horse than it is to take psychedelics. So the clinical model, you know, what I think is helpful about that is it allows us to look at the impact of psychedelic medicine for different patient populations, such as those with trauma, those with depression. There was just a Journal of the American Medical Association article a few months ago showing that psilocybin is effective for depression.
Wow.
And I think the research is really critical, and research is the way to take some of these medicines other than ketamine until they're FDA approved. We think MDMA will be FDA approved sometime in the next year. But I'm not sure, you know, I live in Northern California where we've got a ketamine clinic on almost every street corner.
Really?
And some of them are like, you go into a room where there's curtains between the people and they're in like a, they're on a gurney and they're taking ketamine and they're not having therapy. I don't think that that's the right approach. So I think we need to be evidence-based. We need the right set and setting. So mindset and physical environment. Need intention, you especially need preparation and integration. And that's where a really skilled, certified person holding space for you, mm-hmm. I think, is critical. So I have some concerns about the medical model, but I think in some ways we're going to find our way. We're going to find kind of the balance point between some of the indigenous practices, which I've also participated in, and the more medicalized model. I think we'll end up somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I hope so. When you said that about clinics, so many clinics and kind of the varying legitimacy is the wrong word, but just like the varying support environment, professional support, et cetera, it kind of made me nervous. I'm like, oh, is this the new like pain clinics where they were prescribed like opioids? You know what I mean? Like I just watched a documentary, so it's like fresh on my mind.
It's a problem.
Yeah. Where
it's a problem.
It's like money. I mean, you know, people,
there's a profit motive.
Yes. And this is a kind of an, you don't have to answer this or if you know or don't know, but I guess if MDMA is approved by the FDA, does that mean like a pharmaceutical company has to make it? Okay.
Yeah. So MAPS is the nonprofit that has sponsored the research on MDMA assisted therapy. And then they've made MDMA available to research centers. So places like Johns Hopkins and NYU and UCSF, there's a lot of different places that have had access to research it. And so MAPS, the public benefit corporation, is going to be the pharmaceutical company that makes and dispenses MDMA.
Got it.
And so they've trained, I've gone through their level one training. Mm-hmm. They've trained clinicians, mostly therapists, to use MDMA. So to go through a certification process, and then those people will have first access to the pharmaceutical. But, you know, in some ways pharmaceutical has become such a negative term in our culture, and for good reason, because there is such a profit motive, and you know, our healthcare system is broken and it's really based on disease, not health.
Yeah.
So there is a problem with our pharmaceutical company. But what we're talking about here with MDMA assisted therapy or with psilocybin assisted therapy or ketamine treatment, we're talking about not taking a daily selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. We're talking about 2 to 3 sessions of MDMA with preparation, with integration. So 2 to 3, and then a durable effect, you know, up to 71%, no longer meeting criteria for PTSD. We're seeing that a year out.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So the long-term data is going to be important, and we're still, you know, in the early stages of this. But it's a different type of pharmaceutical model than what most of us are thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. I would love to round out our conversation with your experience, your personal experience having an autoimmune disorder and then reversing it, and where you are today, kind of what the daily life looks like to maintain this health.
Love that question. So, you know, I feel like the symptoms, the conditions that I develop, whether it was the high cortisol in my mid-30s or estrogen problems through perimenopause, and then, you know, noticing the level of trauma that I carry, I feel like these happen for me and through me and not to me. So when I realized that I had positive anti-nuclear antibodies, so I'm making, you know, my immune system is attacking the nucleus of my cells. When I realized that this was happening, it got me to pay attention in a whole new way. And so that's when I started doing autoimmune panels on all of my patients. And I was seeing so many people with autoimmunity.
Wow.
So the 30% that I reported earlier, probably higher in my patient population just because of the type of people that I see. So when I saw this positive anti-nuclear antibody, which was about 6 years ago, I set about understanding, okay, what's the root cause? What are the triggers? I've got the genetic predisposition. What are the triggers And there's this, you know, the three-legged stool, genetic predisposition, leaky gut, and then a trigger. So the empowering part here is that you can do something about the leaky gut and you can do something about the triggers.
Yeah.
So I started working with my food. I shifted to an elimination provocation diet. I gave up gluten, dairy, nightshades, nuts and seeds, some of the things that tend to trigger the immune system, 70% of which is in your gut lining. You know, you think of this tube that goes through your body, your gastrointestinal system, as being inside of you, but actually it's the outside. It's the environment kind of going through your system. Mm. And there's places where it's just one cell thick. So your food really matters.
Wow.
So the way that I healed this positive anti-nuclear antibody, I now no longer have positive antibodies, was to change the way I was eating. Mm-hmm. So elimination diet and then provocation with some of these foods that I gave up. And I found that I can actually tolerate nightshades. I can tolerate nuts and seeds, but gluten and dairy, I just have to stay off of them.
Got it.
Otherwise, my immune system gets overactivated. I get puffy. It's hard for me to, you know, take a ring off, which is one of those signs of inflammation. I addressed the leaky gut. So I took L-glutamine together with some aloe vera. And then I did somatic work. So I started doing the neuroemotional technique. I started seeing a Hakomi therapist. I finished the level one of Hakomi training.
What is Hakomi training? I actually don't know what that is.
Oh, Hakomi is really interesting. It's a mindfulness-based somatic therapy. Mm. And it's a way of, it's kind of guided self-exploration and self-experimentation. So a therapist who's trained in Hakomi is helping you access missing nourishment, sometimes from childhood, sometimes from adulthood, and allowing you to really come downstairs from the cognitive and create this sense of wholeness again. Mm-hmm. And also to, it's just a way of working with the body that I found to be really effective for myself, that activates your inner healer, which is really important. Yeah. And that theme, so instead of like going to a therapist or going to a doctor and you want them to fix you, the idea with Hakomi and with any somatic-based therapy is that you're activating your inner healer, your innate healing capacity. Mm. And the same is true with psychedelic-assisted therapy. So I started the holotropic breath work, as I mentioned, a few years ago. I started doing psychedelic-assisted therapy. So that included once a quarter with MDMA-assisted therapy with a psychologist. So I did that for several years. I've also experimented with microdosing, kind of looking at the effect of psilocybin at low doses, sub-perceptible levels of psilocybin to help with my immune system. And I really believe that many of these things, holotropic breath work, your somatic-based therapy, psychedelic-assisted medicine, these are immune modulators. They modulate the entire PINE network. And there's other immunomodulators too, like vitamin D, curcumin, low-dose naltrexone. Mm. So I tried all of these things. And I tested last year and my anti-nuclear antibodies were negative.
Wow.
So I've tested negative multiple times since then. So, you know, that's an N of one experiment. It's not, you know, a big randomized trial, but it's an interesting way of working. And the protocol is laid out in the book. So it's not a secret. It's something that worked for me. And then there's evidence to support every step along the way.
Yeah, it's so, so powerful. And I think sometimes when we get a diagnosis or there's like a label put on our experience, it could be liberating and also it could really do a number on our mind where we're like, I am this thing now. And so it's really inspiring to hear just the steps you took in order to reverse this, which people can absolutely, absolutely do. Thank you for this. This was so, so enlightening. And I know a lot of people are going to be incredibly helped by this book and your approach. The book is The Autoimmune Cure. And it is, when this comes out, it is out now.
Thank you, Lindsay.
It was so fun. So fun. Thank you so much, Dr. Sarah Gottfried. You can follow Sarah at Sarah Gottfried MD on Instagram. You can find her book on Amazon or at sarahgottfriedmd.com. Thank you all so much for listening. For more from Almost 30, you can go to almost30.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok, baby, at Almost 30 Podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Lindsay Simsek.
And I'm at It's Krista, ItsKrista. And we'll see you on the next one. Thank you.